A new documentary called The Loving Story is about Richard and Mildred Loving, an interracial Virginia couple who got married in Washington, D.C. in 1958. They were soon arrested and charged with miscegenation in the state of Virginia. It was illegal for people of different races to get married. They took their case all the way to the Supreme Court, and its decision, Loving versus Virginia, changed history. The film premieres tonight at 9 p.m. on HBO. It's directed by Nancy Bersky. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show now.
I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you.
So how did the Loving – first of all, what a perfect name for the couple involved in this story.
I know. It's amazing. It seemed like they were fated to take this course, although it was the last thing in the world they really wanted to do.
So how did they meet?
They met as children. She was 11. He was 17. They grew up in the same little town in rural Caroline County, Virginia. I think their families often worked together in the fields and so on. Her brothers played hillbilly music, and apparently he would come and listen to them play.
On the other hand, they did grow up in a segregated community.
The community certainly adhered to Jim Crow rules, but the town itself was there was a lot of mixing in that town. Even though they could not go to school together and they could not go to church together, they certainly hung out together, they worked together, and apparently they loved together.
Did the police see things differently than the other people in the community?
They certainly did. Right outside that community, there was the more normal Jim Crow rules, and the police, the sheriff himself, was particularly adamant about the rules. You know, they were not allowed to marry. It was part of the Racial Integrity Act that was passed in 1924. And not only did Mildred and Richard get married, they went to Washington, D.C. to do so, and then came back and lived in Virginia. So they were evading the law, which really riled the sheriff.
How did their families feel about this? Did they approve of the marriage?
They were perfectly happy about it. They all loved each other. They knew each other for many, many years. They were very supportive.
So they went to Washington, got married. Did they immediately come back home?
Immediately. I don't even think they stayed overnight in D.C.
And then they were arrested immediately?
5 weeks later. 5 weeks later, the sheriff knocked down their door with two deputies and dogs in the middle of the night and dragged them out of bed and threw them into jail.
And what was the sentence?
The sentence was 1 year in the state penitentiary. But to avoid that sentence, they accepted a suspended sentence and agreed to leave the state for 25 years.
Although he had a shorter time in jail than she did.
They only spent 5 days. She spent 5 days in jail upon the arrest, and he had only spent 1 day in jail. But then they were sentenced. They were arraigned and sentenced by Judge Leon Bazile in Bowling Green.
Now, they knew it was illegal for them to get married in Virginia.
You know, it's unclear.
That's why they went to Washington.
Richard certainly knew. I don't know if Mildred knew completely, but she did know that they had gone. Obviously, they were going to Washington for a reason.
What, did they know they were risking arrest? Had other people done something similar and not been arrested?
There were a lot of people who were living together in Virginia. Some who were married, if they had been brought up on charges, sometimes they just got divorced. That's what's so different about Mildred and Richard. Richard refused to divorce Mildred. He could have taken a much easier route and not agreed to be exiled for 25 years, but he refused to divorce her.
Well, they could go back, but they had to go back singly, didn't they?
They were allowed to visit Virginia and their hometown of Central Point, Virginia, by themselves, but they couldn't come back together. The following year, they did come back together. I think they misunderstood the penalty. They came back, and they were arrested again.
Now, you say this miscegenation law was passed in Virginia in 1924. That even seems a little late for me.
Actually, the Racial Integrity Act was passed in 1924. Miscegenation statutes have been on the books for many, many years, going back to the colonies. You know, as soon as we had slavery, there was a need to separate these races and make sure that they did not marry and ideally have sex.
Well, of course, there was miscegenation all along.
That's right.
Most African Americans who come through slavery are a mixed race, and it wasn't by their choice.
That's right. You know, there was a lot of interracial sex during slavery and moving right up to 1924. It's one of the reasons that Virginia was so adamant about putting a law in the books to stop that. So the Racial Integrity Act in 1924 prohibited people of any other ethnic race to marry a white person. It was about
A Chinese person could not marry.
That's right. A Chinese, a Native American, an Indian. It didn't matter as long as you weren't white. This was about preserving whiteness. It wasn't about preserving the other ethnic groups. It was about whiteness.
Was this something unique to Virginia? I would assume there were similar laws.
There were many statutes all around the country.
In the South.
That's right. When the Lovings were arrested, there were 24 states that had anti-miscegenation statutes on their books. But Virginia was very stringent about the general law about mixing, and that's why they had this Racial Integrity Act in 1924 passed.
They didn't try to appeal the conviction right away. What prompted them to decide to fight the ruling years later?
They were utterly miserable in Washington, D.C. They were not city people. They were used to being in the country, and they missed their family and their friends and a community that had tolerated their love.
And then they had to find lawyers to defend them.
What Mildred did is she wrote to Robert Kennedy. She was watching on television what was going on in the civil rights initiatives during the early 60s, and she realized, well, maybe this could help them. So she had the confidence to sit down and write that letter, which I find astounding even today. And Robert Kennedy wrote back to her, said he couldn't help her, but he suggested that she write to the ACLU, which she did.
So the ACLU and the NAACP got involved?
Mostly the ACLU. The NAACP got involved when the case finally went to the Supreme Court. They filed an amicus brief.
And they had these two lawyers, Bernard Cohen and Philip Hirschkopf. Were they experienced in these kinds of cases? Had they faced the Supreme Court before?
Not at all. They were freshly out of law school. Philip Hirschkopf was only out of law school for 2 years. Bernard Cohen had been out of law school a few more years than that. Philip was so young that he couldn't even argue in front of the Supreme Court without getting a special dispensation. But Philip had quite a bit of experience in civil rights matters. So he joined Bernard Cohen to work on this case.
But they must have felt that they had a good chance because the court had already shown an inclination to strike down Jim Crow laws as it had in Brown versus Board of Education.
Timing is everything. When the court agreed to hear the case, I think they felt they had a pretty good shot at winning this as long as they didn't make any major mistakes. But they were very strategic. They didn't try to get this case heard before the court was really ready to hear it.
My guest is Nancy Bersky, whose film The Loving Story will be broadcast tonight at 9 p.m. on HBO about the couple that whose case led to the elimination of miscegenation laws throughout the United States. You were a journalist before you got into filmmaking?
I was actually a photo editor. I worked at the New York Times as a foreign picture editor. I photographed as well and then left the Times in mid-90s to start a documentary film festival in North Carolina called Full Frame.
And how did you come upon the story? Not that it was unknown.
Well, it was relatively unknown to me. I knew the case, but I knew nothing about the couple. I read Mildred Loving's obituary in May of 2008, and I was struck by how little I did know of her.
You know, we have just gotten a call from the Loving's daughter, Peggy Loving Fortune, and we want to bring her into the conversation. Hi, Peggy.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm well. Do you remember much of these events that were occurring while you were growing up?
Well, I remember, Life, Time magazine, taking photographs and then they did some filming of us. But I really didn't know, exactly what was going on. Kids were kids and adults were adults and we were told to stay out. Adult business, go play.
Uh-huh. So this was not something that was discussed over the dinner table?
No, sir. No, sir. Evidently, they did that once we, went to bed or once they laid down. I'm sure they discussed all that they were going through.
Well, they had, I don't know how much you actually know about the case. I assume you know a lot. When they were appealing their conviction, didn't they have a problem? They had pleaded guilty, so didn't that mean they had no right to appeal?
I'm not a lawyer.
Nancy,
so.
is this something that came up in your research?
Yeah, it was a very serious problem for the attorneys. They were well past the period when they could appeal. I think they had 60 days, and they were 4 or 5 years from their suspended sentence. But the lawyers realized that this was still in the breast of the court. As a suspended sentence, it actually hadn't left the court system. So they were able to reintroduce it in 1963.
So if not for that loophole, who knows what might have happened? It might have been another couple if somebody even had thought about bringing this kind of thing to the Supreme
Court. That's correct. They wouldn't have had the name Loving, however.
Your mother died in 2008, but hadn't she spoken out in support of gay marriage? Do you see a similarity between what's happening now in same-sex marriage and what was happening back there with your parents' story?
I know they can use their case because of history. I think my mom was misquoted on the same-sex marriage.
Well, the state of Virginia, in the case, compared its right to prohibit interracial marriage with the right to prohibit incest, polygamy, underage marriage. These are the similar arguments to the sorts of things that we're hearing from people like Rick Santorum about same-sex marriage. Do you, Nancy, see similarities there?
I think that what we're really talking about is human rights and the right to love someone regardless of their race or their gender or their religion. It's about loving people for people. I think that one of the points our film makes is that once you really experience the humanity of another human being, you love them for who they are.
Now, Peggy, you appear in a lot of the old film footage. There's one scene that shows your mother putting on your shoes. What do you see when you look at all of those old home movies?
Oh, Lord, I get very emotional about it, but it shows that she really cared about her family. I mean, if you really look at it, how she put that sock on and made sure that it was on so it would be comfortable on my foot before the shoe, you know, she actually put the shoe on, you know, that took a lot of love, tender care, you know. And she loved the family. She really loved the family.
Well,
she wanted to be with.
It does help that the Lovings are such an attractive couple as well. So they present themselves well. Your father told his lawyers, "Tell the court that I love my mother, and it's just unfair that I can't live with her in Virginia." Nancy, is that something that you could actually argue in court?
You know, it almost doesn't matter. This is the trial about human beings, and I think the lawyers were very smart to recognize that something, that kind of sentiment would actually play well in the court system. You know, they can make their legal arguments, but there's nothing like hearing a human statement like that.
And how did they argue the case? Mostly on human terms?
They dealt with due process and equal protection, but at the end of the day, it really was a human story.
And as Peggy points out, there was a certain amount of press coverage, Time magazine, but was this a national story?
It was relatively little press coverage. The Lovings did not want publicity. Remember, they were living occasionally illegally in Virginia during that time, and they could have been rearrested. So they purposely stayed under the radar.
The state of Virginia, one of its many concerns was that with the children of interracial marriages, what did they say would happen to those children?
They called them martyrs. They called them victims. And I think when you look at the film that will air this evening at 9 o'clock, you'll see it was just the opposite. We have photographs and footage of a very happy, loving, and well-cared-for family.
Peggy, how old were you when your family was able to move back to Virginia?
Well, we were already back in Virginia, but when we actually won the case in 67, I was 8 years old.
So you were growing up interracial, and despite the concerns of the state of Virginia, was it okay?
To me and the people that I was around, yes.
And did you know other interracial children?
Oh, yeah. Pretty well, that little area that we actually lived in, this interracial, you know, kids, just interracial families. All mixed. I call them the mixing bowl.
Both of your parents have passed away now, but did they ever talk about how big an impact they had on the country?
My father never did say anything about it, but my mom, she realized, I mean, even in the film, she said that, you know, the principal of her and her dad, my dad had to go through, but she said it would help other people. So she realized that it would help other people. And before she died, she realized how big of an impact it really was because, you know, it was more mixed marriages, you know, growing.
Well, this changed the laws in 24 states. That was, at that time, half of the United States. We were 48. So that was a major impact. But since there wasn't a lot of press coverage, was it hard getting some of this material?
We were very, very lucky because we discovered some footage that had been shot by a cinema verite filmmaker named Hope Ryden. She had visited the Lovings in 1965 and thought she was going to make a documentary herself. Ultimately, she was not able to do it, and she just put the footage away. So we were very fortunate.
Nancy Bersky's film, The Loving Story, is premiering tonight at 9 p.m. on HBO. Many thanks to you and to the Loving's daughter, Peggy Loving Fortune, for talking with us today.
Thank you.